Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the Court, William Paul Melcher for the appellant, Mr. Nieto, and on behalf of my learned co-counsel, we thank you for taking this case up with respect to the certified issue, that being, in this case, whether the trial court's admission of the investigating detective's opinions at trial rendered Mr. Nieto's trial fundamentally unfair. We believe in this case, under the circumstances, it certainly did, and the opinions below ran contrary to clearly established federal law as opined by the Supreme Court, or at least an unreasonable application of that law. The Supreme Court has made clear that evidentiary errors can constitute a due process violation. In addition to the case of Dowling v. U.S. that we cited in our brief, I'd like to also draw the Court's attention to two other Supreme Court cases, the first being Dawson v. Delaware, and that's cited at 503 U.S. 159, in addition to Lisemba v. California, that's at
3... Are these new cases?
These are new cases, Your Honor.
Well, you have to fill out a gum sheet.
Are these cases not cited in your brief?
They were not cited in our opening brief.
Well, but don't we have rules that require you to advise counsel on the other side and us that these are new cases and ask questions?
I believe Dowling does cite.
Perhaps Dowling does cite.
And I believe the cases that the additional case, the Ninth Circuit case of U.S. versus Harbor, I believe cites at least Lisemba versus California, in addition to a case that I believe is very much on point with this case, and that is Parker versus Gladden. I just wanted to, even though I didn't specifically cite to those cases in the opening brief, I wanted to draw the Court's attention to those, in that where the standard is very clearly set forth in those cases that, again, evidentiary errors can constitute a due process violation. And the test that
well,
we're...
They can.
They can. And the test being, the standard of review, is whether the evidence is so extremely unfair as that its admission violates fundamental conceptions of justice. I think it's clear, and it was not argued below by any court, that the admission of the Detective Enyard's opinion testimony that went directly to the guilt or innocence
of Mr. If it was not argued below, and it wasn't argued in the state habeas corpus, how can we consider it?
Let me rephrase that. It was not disputed that the testimony was inadmissible. It was error to admit that Detective Enyard's testimony.
Of course it was disputed. The whole issue arose when, on cross-examination, the defendant's attorney asked the detective, "Do you think that Mr. Nieto was set up?" That was asking for his opinion. It opened the door big and wide.
Yeah, sure, that was a stupid question.
It was a very stupid question.
Well,
but I think my point was this, that the California Supreme Court's, the California Court of Appeals, and I believe the magistrate in this case, both agreed that allowing the testimony, the opinion testimony of Detective Enyard was error. However, the California Court of Appeals found
error?
The trial court's error.
Was there an objection?
There was an objection.
There was an objection by the person who had asked the question and opened the door?
There was an objection. I think both sides very clearly set forth the record. This is not in dispute at all. We do have the question, as Your Honor pointed out, where the defense counsel did ask a stupid question. That being, do you think that Mr. Nieto was set up?
Right.
A very ambiguous question.
It's not ambiguous at all. This was a shooting that either was done by one person or another, the driver or the passenger. And the idea that the wrong person was being prosecuted admits of the idea that he was set up.
Well, I'm not sure what the defense counsel was referring to. Obviously, that's not in the record.
Maybe she wasn't either.
Your objection isn't to the answer to that question anyway.
Not at all.
Your objection is to the answer to the question.
And there's a further follow-up question that I think would have been the pertinent question to ask, and that is when the prosecution finally asked Detective Enyer, do you believe that, was there any evidence that he was set up in this case? And the answer is no. But yes, Your Honor, you're correct. It's the middle part that we have the problem with, and that is the opinion from the detective that, well, first, the question that was objected to, in your 20 years of experience, has there been evidence that's come to you where somebody has been charged with a crime, but you later on find that the defendant is innocent? That's where the objection was interposed. Now, there was a sidebar where the court says, well, I will allow you to just confine your question with regard to this case. So the follow-up question to that was, would you be sitting here if you believe Mr. Nieto was set up? The answer being no. What would
now,
you do?
What exactly is shocking about that answer? I mean, we had a reference in the last case, or maybe the case before. They were together after a while. But it's not exactly a news bulletin that a police detective testifying at a trial of a criminal defendant, somebody charged with a crime, is going to say, you know, I believe we got the right guy.
Well, I think that's at some point it becomes an inadmissible opinion testimony.
Oh, no question. It's inadmissible. But you've already told us that's not all. The fact that there's an evidentiary problem doesn't provide the basis for federal habeas corpus. The question is whether it's so tainted the proceedings there's a violation of due process. And I have to say, the news that a police detective thinks the defendant being charged with a crime is guilty doesn't strike me as being a real news flash.
Well, obviously not. But the answer to that question,
if it's not, then how is it going to be so prejudicial? How is it going to taint the trial so much they can't get a fair trial, particularly given the trial judge's instruction here to disregard the opinion?
Well, I think if we allowed the investigating detectives to opine as the ultimate guilt or innocence of each defendant, I think that it would obviously make the rest of the trial a little superfluous, especially with regard to the...
Do you really think the jury is wondering whether the detective thinks they got the right guy?
I don't believe that the jury thinks that the detective would be there testifying if he believed he was either set up or that there was exculpatory evidence or...
There are good reasons why we don't allow that kind of evidence. But this isn't an evidentiary appeal. This is a due process appeal, and you've got to show it taints the trial. And that's where I run into a wall.
Right.
I mean, this shouldn't have happened.
It shouldn't have happened. Right.
What leads us to justify a conclusion that it so tainted the trial there couldn't be a fair trial? I mean, I don't think anybody was surprised by the answer that he gave. Maybe the defense attorney for asking the stupid question in the first place. But,
right.
But
okay, well,
why should we think this taints the trial?
I think the first answer that we discussed, that is, in your 20 years of experience, has there any been any evidence that you have come to light that a defendant is not guilty? What would you do with that evidence? Well, I would basically come to court to tell you that this defendant is being unjustly tried. So the two answers in conjunction, I think it really puts it out of bounds.
Wyatt, are you is it your point that the detective is using his integrity to vouch for his opinion?
That's what we argued in our opening brief, and I believe that to be true.
But vouching as a basis for due process violations has up to now been only applied where the attorney vouches in final argument for the veracity of a witness. And we're under AEDPA, so we have to have a Supreme Court holding that says a witness vouching for a witness is a violation of due process. What is that case?
Well, the only case that I could find that is fairly on point is the Parker versus Gladden decision, and that is cited by this court's opinion in U.S. versus Harbor.
Did Parker versus Gladden involve a witness vouching for his own testimony?
It did not. It involved the bailiff who stated to the jury, that wicked fellow, he is guilty. And the court made the point that the...
You understand, counsel.
The big difference.
The big difference. We have AEDPA. Right. Maybe you better go on to some other issues.
You know, who asked that question that started all this?
Defense counsel did open the door, but we have to ask ourselves, what did he open the door to?
How long did he... Was this his first trial?
Oh, I don't know if that's in the record, Your Honor.
You just tell me off the record.
No, I don't even know off the record. I couldn't even make up the answer.
We can all take some satisfaction in the fact that you weren't the attorney.
I was not the attorney of record. Thank you. There is an additional...
I made a mistake like that once with a police officer. I got hit right between the eyes. I never made that mistake again. So it was a good lesson.
But you may have asked yourself, Your Honor, if you open that door, what did you open the door to, and when does the door close?
I didn't.
You didn't ask that question.
I didn't think about doors or anything. I thought I was doing something stupid, you know.
But the additional point to keep in mind in this case is not...
You're beating a dead horse.
Okay. I'll move on, except to say, of course, in this case, we do have the court's instruction, which explicitly allows the jury to entertain the opinion of the detective. And I think that makes it a little bit different.
With regard to that particular case, the judge said, disregard everything involving this 20 years of experience, all the other cases. And prosecutor, a gutsy move, and maybe a foolish move, the prosecutor asked another question after that related to this case. And that probably should have been out of bounds, too, but I guess the trial judge figured that's the response to the question, that's the invited air talk. But that's where I focus my question, and I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I think we have the same problem, whichever question we're focusing on. Nobody's much surprised by the answer.
Well, I was a little bit surprised that the trial court, in its, well, I loosely referred to it in the brief, in the opening brief, as a curative instruction. I don't believe it was curative at all. And it certainly wasn't limiting, and it wasn't really even cautionary. And that is, I'm allowing these opinions. I'm allowing you to take into account the fact that the detective is saying this defendant is guilty, more or less. And I think that's where it gets us to the due process violation under AEDPA.
Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I may have perhaps 1 minute.
All right.
May it please the Court, my name is Deputy Attorney General Eric Reynolds for Respondent. Your Honors, the District Court's denial of appellant's habeas petition should be affirmed because the Court correctly found that the California Court's denial of appellant's due process claim was not contrary to or an unreasonable application of clearly established federal law as determined by the Supreme Court. Appellant has not cited any Supreme Court authority holding that the admission of allegedly improper testimony when invited by the defense and then cured by a judge's curative instruction is a violation of due process. Absent such authority, the California Court of Appeals' decision was not an unreasonable application of clearly established federal law. Appellant contends that the testimony that the detective offered that appellant was set up in his case rendered his trial fundamentally unfair. But the district court gave 4 reasons why that testimony did not result in fundamental unfairness. First, and it's what the court already has spent a lot of time with, is the context in which the testimony was elicited. It was in direct response to a defense's question on cross-examination. It was the defense that first asked the detective his opinion as to whether or not the defendant was set up. The court then allowed the prosecution limited questions on, to follow up on the detective responded, "I don't know," basically left that answer hanging. The prosecution asked a couple of targeted questions to follow up on that response, whether or not there was evidence of the defendant being set up, and if there was such evidence, what would the detective have done in that case? The detective didn't come out and say, "I think the defendant is guilty here." He didn't offer that opinion on the defendant's guilt. He just merely followed up on the defense question on whether or not there was evidence the defendant was set up. So there's the context of the question, basically, that it was invited by the defense. The nature of the exchange was extremely limited. It amounted to a couple of prosecution questions in the whole of the detective's testimony. The court gave an immediate curative instruction. And then based on the...
I don't think it's much of a curative instruction to say you can consider the opinion.
Well, it went beyond that, Your Honor. I'm admitting the detective's testimony. However, you are ultimately to decide beyond a reasonable doubt whether the defendant is guilty. And basically, his second part of the statement says disregard it. I'm admitting it, but disregard it because you need to decide.
No, it says you can hear the opinion, but you've got to make up your mind on all the evidence, right?
Correct. So beyond a reasonable doubt.
This is part of the evidence.
It's admitted as part of the evidence, yes. Yes. However, the court limited its consideration. Basically, it's not a dispositive part of the evidence. The court said, you know, you can factor it in, but it is up to you to decide beyond a reasonable doubt.
In other words, your argument doesn't rise to the level of a constitutional violation that's already part of established Supreme Court law.
Correct.
Okay. Well,
yes.
That's all you need to say. So I think, you know, we've gone through your briefs and all that. And okay, you can have a seat.
Thank you.
Some rebuttal.
Oh, just briefly, Your Honor. I think, as mentioned in our opening brief, this court's decision in U.S. versus Harbor is very instructive in this case, in that the detective's opinion is presumed to be prejudicial. It's inherently prejudicial. And I believe that then the burden then shifts to the state to show otherwise, that it did not have an injurious effect on the verdict.
And the why?
Because of
why
the fact
do we presume it to be prejudicial?
As I believe it's Harbor, it might be Dubria, in our opening brief, at least this court has mentioned several times that police officers' testimony carries a special aura of trustworthiness.
That's a direct criminal appeal.
I beg your pardon?
That's a direct criminal appeal. That's where we, as the trial court, as the California, as the direct appellate court, as the California Court of Appeal, could opine with regard to evidentiary questions. We're here on habeas. We're looking at a due process standard, which you've already acknowledged is a whole lot higher.
Right. And I guess that gets us back to the issue that we kind of already beat to death. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Judge Ferguson, we appreciated very much the reverence you paid.
What?
We appreciated very much the reverence you paid to these awful events of some 69 years ago when we opened the court this morning, especially well taken by those who had friends and relatives who suffered casualties at Pearl Harbor and, of course, the barracks, Schofield Barracks. And, of course, we also congratulate the court on its longevity, also being another anniversary this day.
You know, it's 87 years. Remember that.
That's right. 87 and 60 plus 9.
Are you a lawyer?
Yes, I am. Well, Your Honor, you know me.
I know you. I know you, yeah. And I watched you over there, and I know you're a good lawyer. You probably beat up on me once.
Thank you. Well, I was wondering what you thought of my son here. Now, this is one of the two sons. Remember, you asked him last time I appeared before you, he asked me about my sons. So now you met one.
He's a good lawyer.
Thank you so much.
Good lawyer. You trained him well. And I see where you're a very nice father. You came up and gave him a glass of water. That's very kind. Yeah. So, he's got tremendous... How old is the boy?
Oh, he's 44 now.
Well, he's just getting started, you know.
Yes.
No, he's on the road to great success, and I'm sure he's already achieved that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. We're going to take a brief recess.
All right. This court will stand in a short recess.